You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and this is The Life Aquatic. Regular listeners will know that my guests are usually in far-flung places, thousands of miles from Boat Radio headquarters, and so we speak via Skype or Source Connect. But a few weeks ago, I enjoyed a special treat. The Wright family, John, Mia, and their five-year-old son Theo, paid me a visit. In fact, the port of Sawyer, a short distance from my house, was only the second stop on an adventure that looks like it will take them all around the globe. And so, on a beautiful sunny day with barely a breath of breeze, John and I picked up some pastries, clambered into his tender, and headed out across the spectacular bay to where his boat sat at anchor.
So here we are, Itchy Foot, beautiful. Presumably there's a story behind the name.
Yes, just don't tell Julia Donaldson about the name of our boat.
Okay.
Or the logo on the back as well. She might, actually her illustrator might have something to say about it.
Right, well we'll get to that a little later. Meantime, let's see if we can get aboard without me falling in.
John and I met in Iceland.
Okay, what were you doing in Iceland?
John was sailing with an Irish crew who were retracing Shackleton's steps, and I was just waiting for him, because, you know, John is Mr. Wright, so I was up in Iceland waiting to meet Mr. Wright.
Well, he is actually Mr. Wright,
mm-hmm.
But you weren't really just waiting.
No. No. What was I doing up there? No, I was just waiting.
Okay, so you were waiting for the right sailor to
mm-hmm.
come along.
That's right.
John, were you always a sailor?
No, not at all. My family, my dad and my elder brothers were keen dinghy sailors up on Derwent Reservoir in Northumberland. But it was a bit cold and rainy and miserable for me, so they couldn't really get me out on the water. It was only in my 20s that I sort of took my first RYA comp crew sailing course in the Canary Islands, but that gave me the hook, that gave me a bug to do more of it.
Mm. And how about you, Mia? Were you always a sailor? Did you sail as a child?
No, I didn't, but I spent a lot of time on boats. My mom's from Bohuslän, the west coast of Sweden.
Okay.
And I spent most of my summers on and off motorboats. My uncle built boats completely out of wood with dowels and things. So, and the Swedes will go out for 6 weeks at a time. And I spent a lot of time on boats. But once John and I started talking about trying to do something like this, I've now done 3 competent crew courses. So I'm competent crew.
And where did you grow up? Did you grow up looking at the sea?
Yes. I grew up in Southern California and spent my summers on the west coast of Sweden.
Right. Right. Mm. And you did a fairly intense training course recently with Regina Sailing?
I did, yeah. That was the third one, and the thing that made that unique was that it was all women on the course, so it was 4 of us.
Was that by chance? Or?
No, he books an all-women's study week at least once a season, I think.
Yeah, I think that was his second, his first. Leon, this is Leon, the owner or the instructor on Regina.
Okay.
Has found it so successful to diffuse the usual dynamic when men and women learn together or husbands and wives learn together to offer a woman's only course. So I think he's probably going to keep it up because he was raving about how successful it was.
Yeah, he said that most of the time he'll take a couple of couples out, or four men, and they're all, oh, give me the helm, fighting over it and everything. And then with us, he was saying, oh, does anyone want to take the helm? And everybody was like kind of inching away. No, I'll be fine right over here. And by the end of the week, we were just organizing who was going to do what, and he was just down below emailing the husbands.
Right, while you negotiated the Stockholm Archipelago. Mm-hmm.
That's right, in the dark. That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so how nervous were you when you first decided to embark on this big adventure?
I don't think it was nerves. I think what... That's right.
Opening a packet of biscuits for my son.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's 11s, so...
Yeah, absolutely. Oreo cookies.
I don't think I was nervous. I think it was more... we had a lot to do before we actually got to that point. So I think I started making lists in my head and that sort of thing. I don't think I was nervous. I always enjoy the water, and I feel actually more uncomfortable if I can't see the sea. I lived for 5 years in Germany, just couldn't figure out why I was so unhappy, but I didn't have contact with water, and it actually, probably 3 years in, I went, ah, that's what it was. And then I would go and spend weekends in Amsterdam or in Italy near the seaside.
Yeah, sure. So, John, how did you both end up in Oslo? Have I got that right? You were living in Oslo?
Yeah. So, well, we met in Iceland, and as Mia says, she was just waiting for me there. I was sailing there. I did a few sailing trips with a great Irish crew.
Oh, they were so nice.
On Celtic Spirit. And we met in this tiny little fishing village on the north coast of Iceland, Ísafjörður, population 2,000 kind of place. And there were two bars in Ísafjörður, and they alternated which night the busy bar was. The locals sort of took it in turns. So we went to the busy bar. So after 10 days sailing across the North Atlantic...
This seems very community spirited.
Really, isn't it? So if you wanted a quiet pint, you just, on an off day, you went to the other pub. And if you wanted a loud pint, you went to the busy bar. Very civilised. Anyway, strange place.
I suppose if too many people wanted a quiet pint on one particular night, that would become the noisy bar, and then it would all go a bit wrong.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
With population 2,000, you probably don't have to worry too much about...
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think they took turns so that both would stay in business.
Exactly.
Right.
So we met in this bar, but Mia was living in Oslo, and I was living here in Mallorca, actually working and living in Mallorca. And we sort of had our long-distance relationship for about 3 years until... Finally, we decided to live together, and it was a choice of Spain or Oslo, and we picked Oslo for many reasons, and that's how we ended up living in Oslo, I think.
There must have been very good reasons, because we're sitting on your beautiful boat, about which more later, in really a sort of paradise lagoon bay.
Absolutely.
And the sun is shining.
Absolutely.
You don't get quite so many days of sunshine.
No.
In Oslo.
But what you do get in Oslo as Mia is a work permit.
As an American.
I couldn't get a work permit in Spain.
I see. Okay.
So that did.
So I could have made an honest woman out of her and to get her down here, but it seemed kind of like an odd way of approaching marriages for the reason of work permit.
Oh, no, so that wouldn't have worked.
Plus, I think at a subconscious level or an unspoken level, there was thought of children, and Norway's a very good place. Speaking of children, Norway's a very good place to have kids.
I should explain that Teo has successfully... divided the Oreo cookie.
They put it the wrong way around.
Two pieces,
and there are hearts on the inside.
Without breaking either of the biscuits, brilliantly done.
And discovered the manufacturing flaw as well. That they're imprinted on the wrong side.
So back to the story. You're living in Oslo.
Yep.
In an apartment, a house.
Yep. It was a two-story apartment. So it felt a little bit like a house.
Is that what you would call a duplex in California?
Maybe, but a duplex would be on its own. This was the third floor and the attic converted. So it was an apartment.
Right, okay. And had either of you lived on a boat before?
I'd spent a couple of months, 3 months, living on a sail training boat, sail training yachts, on the south coast of the UK, many years earlier. So I had a sense of what five people living on a 36-foot boat is like.
Mm-hmm. It depends whether it's five big blokes.
It was four blokes and a woman living on a 36-foot bloke on a boat, but it was fine. And then I've done a fair amount of long distance cruising, and then you get a sense of what it's like to spend time on board.
Yeah,
but no, we'd not really lived in such confined quarters.
So what were you doing in Oslo? Mia, what do you do for a living? What's your...
I was teaching computer software.
Okay, sure.
So I would travel around. It was friendly fire. It was within our company. So I was working for the research and development, and I was teaching the new stuff that was coming out in our own software.
And John, how about you?
I'm on a sabbatical for Telenor, which is a telecommunications company. And previous to that, I worked in the computer games industry, both in Spain and in Norway.
So, when did Teo come along?
5 years ago.
Yeah.
And you were in Oslo?
Yes. Yes.
And was it always the plan to cruise, to sail around the world with children?
I don't think it was always the plan to sail around the world, or to cruise particularly. I think it's something that I've had in mind. So
you have to tell them about the Excel sheet.
Well, yeah, exactly. So I tried to work on yachts and super yachts when I first came to Spain, and quickly kind of discovered. Well, this was my experience. My experience was that the more fun sailing you want to do, the less you get paid for it. And that if you want to earn a decent living, then you're very, very lucky if you also get to do some fun sailing. So I kind of was left with the conclusion that if I want to do what I want to do, if I want to travel at my own pace and see the world and sail, then I have to do it on my own terms. I'm not going to get that as a paid gig. So then in the back of my head, I always had this thought of at a retirement point or as a sabbatical, this was before I met Mia, I would find the opportunity to go and do this.
So workavoidance.com.
Yes. Yeah, that was a nickname I was given at university, actually. I was responsible for work avoidance-based activities at university.
You didn't put this on your CV, obviously, when you applied to Telenor.
No, I didn't. No. But thank you for bringing that up.
Yes.
Because nobody at Telenor will hear this.
Actually, they all will.
So I ended up with the domain name workavoidance.com. Yeah.
But we should say how much you're looking forward to going back to work.
I am. Well, that will come. I'm sure I will at some point be looking forward to going back to work, but it hasn't come yet. But of course, I miss the people, obviously.
Yeah, sure. So Mia, when was there a moment, a eureka moment, when you suddenly both found yourselves absolutely in sync, and you both said one day, let's sail up and sail around the world? Was there a particular point that you remember where that happened?
No, I wouldn't say so. John brought me an Excel sheet at one point when we were chatting about this, and Teo was probably about 3 at that point. And he said he'd blocked out across one or down one side all of the members of our family and what we would have going on in which years. And we were just realizing that if we don't go now, it was basically now was good for Teo because he'd get enough out of it. He'll still remember things going on, but he doesn't need to be in school at that point. When they get a little bit older, I feel like they really need the socializing aspects and things like that. And at the moment, our parents, thank goodness, are all fit, and so they don't need us either. So this was, if we were going to make this work, we should do it now.
So have the parents joined you on board? I should point out that Teo is making very helpful helicopter noises, very realistic helicopter noises, actually, in the background. And you know what? That's fine.
Can the helicopter be silent?
Stealth
helicopter.
Don't worry.
That'd be all right.
Idea. Yeah.
Maybe
Airwolf,
Blue Thunder, or Airwolf. Yeah, rifle shows. So, when did you decide then? Was it with the Excel spreadsheet?
Well, we talked about it, and then we just kept talking more and more about it. And then at some point we decided, okay, look, we better make this happen now, or we're just going to talk about it and talk about it and talk about it. And at some point we will have talked about it so much, it loses its urgency. Yeah. And so we, it was gradual. I wouldn't say there was a one deciding moment. Nothing happened.
Yeah.
We just became more and more. We were talking about it. And we decided, okay, well, let's just do this. And the housing situation in Norway was very good. So we thought and everybody was talking about that maybe not being so good. So we thought, okay, we need to sell now anyway. And then we just, that started to give us more and more momentum.
You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike Madel with the Life Aquatic. My guests today are John, Mia and Teo, the Wright family, who have only recently set sail aboard Itchy Foot, and we'll be taking a look below decks after this short break.
Hello, I'm Captain Bob May from Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show, and you're listening to Boat Radio.
Earliest prehistory reveals mankind's innate connection to the sea, from boats of woven reed in Egypt, to Homer's black ships of the Trojan War, down to the naval battles of Greece, Rome, and every civilization since. I'm Brandon Huebner, and I'll present the history, archaeology, and literature that connect us with our past on the sea, all that on the Maritime History Program. Join me as we voyage down through the ages and witness the development of sailing, trade, and much more. The Maritime History Program, with me, Brandon Huebner, every Wednesday here on Boat Radio.
This is Edward Smith from OPA Racing.
This is Ken Little, president of Glock Performance Boat Challenge.
Hi, this is Frank Pillsbury with Marine Max and the DFW International Boat Show in Dallas, Texas.
We explore all kinds of boating topics on Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show. Hi, I'm Captain Bob May. We get underway, making way, Saturday evenings here on Boat Radio.
This is Heather Lohe, director of membership for Boat US. Thanks for listening to Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show.
I'm Michael John, and each month on Boat Radio, I'll be looking at life on London's magnificent River Thames, from the dredgers emptying their cargoes of sand and gravel, to the mudlarks combing the shore for lost treasures. I'll be meeting the people, visiting the places, and boarding the ships that work this mighty, muddy artery. So join me, Michael John, for Tales of the Thames on Boat Radio.
This is Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell with the Life Aquatic. I'm on board Itchy Foot with the Wright family, Mia, Teo and John. So Mia, did you write a list of the things that you wanted from a boat?
I think I did. Well, we talked about it. We started looking at different things that would be suitable. And John did more boat research. He's very good at checking things out on the internet and doing research, whether it's Teo has a rash. We need to find out if that's something that we need to go and see a doctor about, or anything wrong in the apartment or anything. So he's very good at that. So he did a lot of boat research, and we started looking at different things. And Hallberg Rossi is Itchy Foot's a Hallberg Rossi 39, and she comes from 20 minutes from where my mom was born. So it's kind of close by. I've always seen them, known about them, and that sort of thing. So I always had a soft spot for it. But we went and we had a look at a couple of different boats. And one of them was an Ovni, and it just didn't feel very cozy. So one of my main things was that it would be, well, two main things, I guess, that it would be safe and that it would be cozy.
John, did you do an Excel spreadsheet listing the requirements from your vessel?
Not really. I mean, I had, it makes me sound like a complete nerd, but I had a few Excel spreadsheets. Pros and cons lists primarily, and prices of what it would cost to fix various things. But so when we first set off on the plan of doing this, our initial idea was actually to start in California. Mia's parents, Mia grew up in California, his parents are still in California. At the time, the Norwegian krona was very strong against the dollar, so you could get a lot of dollars for your Norwegian krona. And we really fancied the Pacific coast of Mexico as a cruising ground and possibly a Pacific hop after that. Seemed just like a fun place to start. And we thought if we have to spend a few months getting a boat ready to go, then where better to do it than San Diego or somewhere like that? You know, it's quite cheap and it's a beautiful, beautiful climate. So then, knowing very little, precious little, hi Dave, knowing precious little about American boat manufacturers and American boats, I realised I needed to enlist the help of someone who knew more about it. So I contacted a guy who runs sail cruising expeditions, John Neal, who runs Mahina sailing expeditions. And on the side of that business, he does boat consultancy. He helps cruisers find the right boat. So I spoke to him via email a lot about American-built boats, or Taiwanese-primarily-built boats. And then our plans changed for various reasons, and we ended up starting looking in Europe again. And Halbergrassi came to the top of his list, and it had already been at the top of my list for a European boat. I just didn't expect to find one in California. So yes, I had a pros and cons list of various boats we looked at. But as Mia says, if I took a pure, we looked at an Ovni in Norway, and if I looked at the list purely analytically, it would have been the better boat choice. But there was no emotional resonance to it. So when we stepped on board, it didn't feel like it could be our home easily. And that trumped pretty much all of the other considerations, because you have to... we felt we had to attach ourselves. It had to be a home for our family, and that was important.
And presumably, she wasn't called Itchy Foot.
No, she wasn't.
She was named Pollux.
Pollux.
Yes, correct. Careful pronunciation. After the
that
star.
That had to go.
So yeah, that was changed pretty quickly.
Itchy Foot.
Mm.
There's a story behind this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Can you tell me what it is?
Yeah. Would you like me to?
No, you do it.
Okay. Well, since Teo was born, pretty much we've read to him stories every night. And the Julia Donaldson books are Julia Donaldson, Alex Schaefer?
Yes.
Yes. He's the illustrator.
Scheffler.
Thank you. Poor Alex is always the forgotten half of that relationship, isn't it? Loved the books, absolutely adored the books, and we were trying to come up with a name for the boat, and I was just reading The Snail and the Whale to Teo one night, and Mia was just listening in the background, and I got to the bit where it talked about the snail having an itchy foot, and Mia shouted through, "Itchy Foot, that's a nice name for a boat," and it stuck.
The Halbergrassi 39 is a pretty sought-after boat. I mean, it's not quite the Bentley of the seas, but it is, you know. Mm. I interviewed...
We like her.
Chris De Croce and his wife, Melody, live on a Cal 35 in Florida. And when I said to Chris, and I might ask you this question later too, if money were no object, what boat would you buy? This was the boat he plumbed for.
Mm.
And he's a pretty famous guy.
Oh, yeah.
So... Can you give me the stats? We like to hear one or two of the numbers. So she's 10,000
yep.
kilos?
Yeah, 10,000 kilos.
It's not nice to ask a lady what she weighs.
straight in there. 12.22 meters long and draws 1.85 meters.
So six feet and 1 inches.
Something like that. Yeah, she's 19 years old, hull number 111.
We met some of the people that were working on her when she was made. So it was really cool. Which hull was it? Because I had friends. We made friends with people that are running Adam's Boat Care in Sweden, not far from the Halbergrassi boatyard. And as soon as we told them which boat we bought, they're like, which hull number was it? I think he might have worked on it. So,
so I think I actually had a crayfish dinner party with the guy who laid the decks 19 years ago on Porto. Which is...
It's nice that you have such a personal connection with the boat and the people who built the boat. That's lovely, I think. That's
beautiful. Really, really, really. They're wonderful people.
Yeah, but she's very nice for us. You know, she's the layout down below is a nice centre cockpit, which was one of the wishes on the list, and actually was one of the negatives against the Ovni we looked at, for example, because it's a very aft cockpit, very open at the back. You really felt like this: you step back and you're in the sea. And with a kid on board, centre cockpit just makes everything, makes the dangerous, scary sea a little bit further away, a little bit further for him to fall.
And we can say, and he follows instructions, so we can say, don't leave the cockpit without asking, and that works, where yeah. it wouldn't work in another boat.
Yeah. I understand, so yeah, sure.
The cockpit is a safe place. In
have you made modifications?
No. You put up the lifeline netting.
I put the lifeline up, yes. I put the netting up.
But not much beyond that. I mean, we didn't fully net the boat. Some people put netting absolutely everywhere. But from what I've... Speaking to other cruising families, there seems to be a gradual progression away from netting. And once you sort of get into teenage years or even sort of 10 years old, people just stop netting. Because it's a lot of work, and
yes, it is.
No, and for not that much gain, but some people with toddlers will cover the entire every single entry point with netting to really protect their kids. But Teo's very stable on his feet, and he's whenever we're out and about, he's clipped on with a harness, so there's not far for him to fall.
Sure. So, can we take a tour below?
Sure.
Certainly.
So I'm leaving the cockpit, heading down the steps. I'm going to try to do this without falling over and making a fool of myself.
Oh, this is lovely. Chris DeCroce, listening in Florida, you would absolutely love this. The workmanship is... This is very clean. I can't believe this boat's nearly 20 years old.
Yeah, she is. I guess it's the hardwood. Survives well. And you do have to kind of look for the dents and the scratch. There are many a dent and scratch, but it... I don't know,
Well, one or two nicks here and there, maybe. But... So, we're in quite a roomy saloon, and presumably this converts and gives you extra berths. Yeah?
The table doesn't drop, but the starboard side settee, the back of the settee lifts up and turns into sort of a bit wide single bed, because
yeah.
there's sleeping room all under the back. There, so then you get an extra berth there. I've crossed an Atlantic. I've crossed the Atlantic in the sister ship of this hull 69, oddly enough, and slept on the port side berth quite comfortably. Though you sort of sleep in a bit of an L position, so you can sleep two down here.
Can we go forward?
Sure. The forepeak is currently our dumping room / kids playroom. Lots of storage, and when we have guests, it can be a guest room.
Yeah.
But right now, it's just kind of a storage and Teo's toys.
Pretty roomy though, not bad at all.
Yeah, I've again slept in there myself, and it's it's good length. So, yeah.
And here?
Yeah, heads.
Heads, yeah.
Yeah,
the shower as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's all in one unit, so it's not separate. I think on the new hub, we had a look around on our new Halbergrassi 40, and although I think it was the 42 I was looking at, and then you sort of have two heads as the next level up, and more of a shower room they've done on the new Halbergrassis.
Looks new.
She's nice.
She's really been looked after very, very well. A lovely galley here, which is starboard as you come down the steps from the cockpit. And that looks great as well.
Yeah.
Refrigerator?
Yeah, refrigerator here. The thing that we love about the galley as well, you can't obviously see it on the radio, but it's very easy. It's because it's U-shaped. If you jam yourself in, you have basically 3 inches of wiggle.
So you're not going to get chucked around, are you?
So there's no need for straps or anything like that to try and hold you in. You can brace yourself and cook, leaning back against the U-shaped piece behind you.
They've thought about it, haven't they?
And, so everything's nice and deep storage. And she's got stacks of storage, especially in the heads in the bathroom. Ridiculous amount of storage that, you know, we...
So they made very clever use of the space.
Well, what I read about the Halbergrassi 39 was that they built basically, for all intents and purposes, a 40-foot boat, because she's 40-foot length, and then laid it out like a 36-foot boat.
So it's just a very big 36-foot boat, rather than trying to fit in an extra couple of berths or squeeze in an extra bathroom.
All the lockers, all the cupboards, all the storage is bigger, basically.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay. So...
And one of the... Talking to my boat consultant, John, very important for him to have certain sorts of things, and one of them is a lot of fuel storage. So we have about 500 litres of fuel and a decent amount of water storage. So we have about 500 litres of water, fresh water as well.
Oh, that's good.
So it's another area where the Halberg-Ressis do quite well. They give you lots of tank space, not just storage space.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is important if you're a family cruiser.
Right, exactly.
So chart table and your electronics here.
Mm-hmm.
All at this station, which is very, very neat. Also very roomy, actually, surprisingly so.
No, it's a proper full-size chart table as well, which is rare, I think, these days, and somewhat unnecessary. But it's a nice place to sit. It's a very comfortable seat.
Yeah, not bad. And the master cabin.
Yeah, take it back here. So more clothes hanging. And then...
I'm not going to climb onto the bed with you, but this looks... Oh. This is very nice.
So this was originally... the original layout here is a double... bed on one side and a single on the other with a V-shaped gap in them between to allow you to enter. And a previous owner built a wooden inlay.
So he's bridged over the gap.
So he's bridged over the gap, turning it into a more or less a 3 meter wide bed, a 2 meter by 3 meter wide bed. So at the moment, the three of us are all sleeping in here. We didn't co-sleep in Oslo. We took a more sort of... where Teo was sort of in his own cot from the start and in his own bedroom quite quickly after.
But if you're going to take a five-year-old on an adventure, you've got to make some concessions, haven't you?
Right, and it doesn't actually feel like a concession. We've really enjoyed it, and we've almost been kicking ourselves thinking, well, why didn't we go sleep earlier?
Yeah.
But it's different when you have to get up and go to work and if you, you know...
Sure, of course. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're on... At the moment, I suppose, before you get into the real, like, ocean crossings and stuff like that. It's a nice sort of holiday that you're on.
Yeah, really, isn't exactly. It? Yeah. Exactly. Very much so. Mind your head.
Okay. Right. Should we head back up to the cockpit, where I will reconnect Mia and continue our conversation. Once again, managed to do that pretty daintily, actually. Because I am the sort of person who bumps into things a lot. So, back in the cockpit. And the squealing you can hear in the background is the tram, which trundles from Sawyer down to the port of Sawyer. And it is it's a fabulous way to travel. Mia, where did you buy this vessel?
In Palma.
Right, okay. And then you spent a few months on board?
Well, we bought the boat in October. It was interesting. We had a week. We had a crazy week where we had a showing for the house on Sunday. Then we had a second showing on Monday. Sold the house on Tuesday. 15 minutes later, became the owners of the boat. And I, on the Friday, went and picked up my letter of Norwegian citizenship.
And resigned, or was that the weekend?
Yes, I resigned as well, and I resigned on the Friday.
Okay. So when people list the most stressful things that you can do in life, you know, if they were to write a top 10 list, you've hit four or five...
In a week.
At least, in a week. Yeah. Those top 10 most stressful things.
We should have got married again.
That's why I shake a little bit. All the time. That's my twitch.
You still haven't quite recovered. Your eye. You're not winking at me then. So, was she at the Real Club Nautico in Palma?
Yes.
Okay.
Which I thought was a bit of a sign as well, because I've always had a soft spot for Palma and Mallorca in general. In fact, not far from here, we had a wedding reception up in Fornalutx.
Oh, right.
Mm. Yeah.
So you were married?
No, well...
Officially, yeah, because you can't actually be married in Mallorca unless you're a resident of Mallorca.
That's right.
But you had a reception in
Fornalutx. We did.
Which is where my daughter goes to school.
Oh, all right. Lovely.
So, you went through all of those stressful things all in the space of a week, and then eventually you flew down here.
In November, we came down to visit her.
Okay.
John had been down twice. I hadn't seen it. I hadn't seen the boat.
Okay.
Trust my husband.
Yeah, that is quite...
Well, I've seen the sister ship, and of course I was on Regina for a week, and that was... a lovely experience, so I was sold.
Yes, so sold on a slightly different experience, though. I mean, Regina does have a sauna.
Yeah,
different perspective. And
I thought they were joking with me. Leon's like, "Oh yeah, so while you guys are ashore, I'll just set up the sauna." I'm like, "Yeah, you go ahead and do that." I thought he was joking. We got back and we had a steam sauna in the cockpit.
No.
Oh yes. Mm.
So that's the Halbergrassi experience that I sold my wife on, and then
can I just
not quite delivering.
Yeah, well,
it was actually, incredible.
Yeah, those crazy Scandinavians.
That's right.
John Palmer de Mallorca is a busy spot. There's a lot of cargo traffic. There's a lot of passenger ferry and cruise ship traffic on top of all the pleasure boats and the fishing boats. Was slipping her lines for the first time. Was that a baptism of fire? Were you fairly confident you weren't going to clang into anything?
Actually, the
first time...
There was two first times. That's the way I'm looking at it. Uh-huh. Right. So there was the first time in November, shortly after we bought her. We came down for this vacation. And because we wanted to spend the time vacationing or getting to know the boat and relaxing a little bit, I didn't want to spend the whole time doing maintenance. So we didn't haul her out for the winter. And I, to be fair, I didn't even properly winterize her. Thinking that, you know, it's Palmer, so it wasn't so important to winterize her against frost or anything like that. And I knew it was just going to be a few months before we were back down in February. So, what I wanted to do was put a bit of power under the diesel engine and actually use her and get it going. So towards the end of our 10 days down here, we thought, oh, well, we'll just take her out for a spin in the Bay of Palmer. There wasn't any wind, so we just thought we'd take her out for a motor. But it was an incredibly anxious experience for me, and I, with hindsight, I think I know what it was. At the time, I attributed my anxiety to having my kid on board and it being my own boat, which all of which is very different to when you charter. Having your own boat is different to when you charter. Not knowing the boat at all. But actually, I think, with hindsight, the second trip we did, or the second time we left Palmer this spring, was I had almost no anxiety at all. And the difference
because
was...
Because I was helming.
My wife was helming. No, the difference was the second time I felt prepared. The second time I'd read charts, I'd read guidebooks. I'd done all of the things that you should actually do before you slip lines and go.
Made a plan,
and it was...
Actually owned life vests.
Things like, well, we earned the life vest.
We borrowed them.
We borrowed life vests the first time, you're right. So the first trip was very anxious because I just didn't feel prepared and it felt like a rushed thing. And then the second time in the spring when we left Palmer to come around to Port Dondrecht, it felt very natural and very comfortable trip round. No, not exhilarating the first time. More exhilarating the second.
This is The Life Aquatic on Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. My guests are Mia and John Wright, and five-year-old Teo, who's looking at me from the saloon at the moment, who have set sail on the adventure of a lifetime. We'll take a short break now. When we come back, we'll talk about future plans.
Hi, I'm Sarah O'Kelly, founder of Skipper's Review. I started Skipper's Review because I wanted somewhere online for my local boating community to make connections and recommendations. So now it's up and running. I've been getting out of the office to enjoy the Florida sunshine and to meet some of my members. Each week, you can hear me swapping salty tales with sailors, surfers, swimmers, divers, boat owners, and builders, anyone with a story to tell about their life and their relationship with the sea. So join me, Sarah O'Kelly, with Skipper's Review on Boat Radio.
earliest prehistory reveals mankind's innate connection to the sea. From boats of woven reed in Egypt, to Homer's black ships of the Trojan War, down to the naval battles of Greece, Rome, and every civilization since. I'm Brandon Huebner, and I'll present the history, archaeology, and literature that connect us with our past on the sea, all that on the Maritime History Program. Join me as we voyage down through the ages and witness the development of sailing, trade, and much more. The Maritime History Program, with me, Brandon Huebner, every Wednesday here on Boat Radio.
Hi, I'm Dave Dempsey from Marine Intelligence. If you're the owner or captain of a superyacht, then you know how expensive internet can be. And yes, it's a ripoff. We've made it our mission to revolutionize the world of marine communications. We will find you the best price for your internet by comparing all major vendors. And we do that for free. That's right, no charge to the boat. It's a free service. We get you the best price for your yacht, whether it's just one boat or a fleet of boats, and all the savings will be passed on to you. We can save you over $1,000 US per meg. So stop doing what you're doing and visit marineintelligence.net now, before you forget.
This is Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. My guests are the Wright family, John, Mia and Teo, and we are on board their beautiful Hallberg Rassy 39 Itchy Foot. Mia, I take it that you're going to be homeschooling.
We already have started.
Right, and have you opted for a formal plan in conjunction with a school somewhere, or is it a little bit of sort of making it up as you go?
Well, it's not really making it up as you go. What we're doing, we started off teaching him to read using a book that's 100 easy lessons, and it's all phonetics. Mm-hmm. So we're just trying to teach him the basics of being able to read and give him that gift, because John and I both love to read and would love it if Teo also loves to read. We mentioned The Snail and the Whale and mentioned that we've been reading to him since he was born, basically. And he's always been, if he needs a bit of comfort, he'll take a book, sit with a book, and want somebody to read to him. And that's nice. So hopefully that bodes well. So we're teaching him to read, and we're doing activity books for math. And we've also, we're given a really cool game that basically taught him arithmetic in 20 minutes. It was great, with little dinosaurs. And anyway, it's great. Okay. So we're trying to make it as fun as possible.
I have a four-year-old daughter, as you know, Molly, who may well be listening, so I'll be careful what I say. But at school, for children of that age, learning stuff is not, in a formal way, it's not really that important, is it? It's to a degree that it's more about fun and about socialisation. Do you worry about that at all, the fact that he will be often times quite isolated, or has that not happened?
We're concerned. We're not worried about it. And yeah. It's we take every opportunity we can to get him together with other kids. And okay. We've been following a couple of Facebook pages and stuff that cater to kids on boats and that kind of thing. So... Mm-hmm. We will pick that up. We haven't really met a lot of people in the Med yet, but we haven't been actually underway so long. We were in Palma, and he's very social with people he meets. And in Norway, he was in daycare from a year.
Yeah.
And they were incredible. And just being in that group, learning social skills with a group of his peers was really positive, and now we're hoping that this will also... He's a bit shy to begin with, and we're hoping that this will also encourage him to be a little bit less shy. He's great with adults.
Mm.
He's really
Yeah. Well, he shook my hand firmly when I met him.
Oh, that's nice.
I'm sure. Yeah. So, well, you know, for a 5-year-old boy, that's pretty good.
We get very many compliments. We're very proud of him.
Yeah. Well, he's certainly, you know, he's very polite. John, is there a grand plan?
No. The grand plan is definitely to not have a plan. I'm a firm believer that with sailing, you can get yourself into a lot of trouble by sticking too closely to a plan you've made too far in advance. That safety comes from planning and from knowing what you're doing and from being clear about what you're intending to do and then throwing that all away if you need to or if there's any reason to.
For example, it's always important to yield to the weather, isn't it?
Right, yeah, exactly. So, and I think we'll also, because another big driver for us is, the goal for us is to spend time with Teo and to be part of his childhood and to be part of his education and just be as a family. And as Mia mentioned, you know, we are concerned about making sure he has the opportunity to socialise. And if that means we're going to spend a month sitting in an anchorage in Greece because there's two other family boats there and the kids get on, then we'll do that. And if we, you know, even so far as where we winter, if we meet a great family boat with great kids on board that are planning on spending 3 months, you know, 4 months in Malta, whatever, then we might adjust plans and just do that.
And with Wi-Fi and, you know, you've got in every marina that you pull into, you're going to, or pretty much every anchorage, actually, you're going to get Wi-Fi around the Mediterranean, so it's going to be not too difficult, I should imagine, to organise a little flotilla for a few weeks or so, just to get all the kids together.
Hopefully,
and maybe even do group teaching, group lessons.
Yeah. We have in terms of grand plan, we do have the desire, the background desire, to get across to the Caribbean. And one of the, as well as the just seeing that part of the world, another driver for me is to get Teo into that environment, because from what I've seen or read, finding family boats in the Caribbean is easier than the Mediterranean. Certainly English-speaking family boats, because there's a lot of Americans coming down doing their sabbaticals.
Back to the sort of the notion of a loose plan, anyway. Mediterranean,
mm-hmm.
and then across the Atlantic.
So it's either Mediterranean and winter somewhere in the Mediterranean, or Mediterranean and sail across the Atlantic. And the only thing from really saying we're going to sail across the Atlantic is the fact that we haven't sailed around an island yet. So it seems a little bit presumptuous to, you know, before we've even crossed to Menorca, to say, yes, we're going to cross the Atlantic. I've sailed across the Atlantic before. It doesn't hold any great fear for me, but it's a different dynamic as a family. As I say, it just seems a bit presumptuous to say that's what we're going to do. Hopefully, as the season progresses and we gain more experience as a family sailing, then I think it'll be easier to say, yeah, you know, actually we can, this is working out well and we want to keep doing it, and the Caribbean seems like a good place to continue the adventure.
Because you'd anticipate a considerable amount of time out of sight of land when you're crossing the Atlantic.
And with
a 5-year-old on board, there are many important safety considerations.
Yeah, very much so, very much so. And it's an ocean. It's a non-trivial bit of sailing. And we would, I am sure, bring extra additional competent crew for that leg as well, additional adults. For the social aspect, for all of us to have a more interesting, you know, conversation, to mix it up.
Yeah, sure.
But also from a safety perspective, that there are more, if one of us were to get food poisoning or to fall ill or for something to happen, there would be an additional adult to sort out the problem whilst someone looked after Teo.
So, Mia, the Caribbean and then through the Panama Canal? Or do you think you might round Cape Horn?
No.
Baby steps. I don't know. I always had this, if we're going to do this, John, then I want to sail under the Harbour Bridge in Sydney. But that's an awfully long way.
Yeah, it is.
So we'll see how it goes.
But it's a circumnavigation.
First, Menorca.
Yeah, sure.
I think. Sorry to jump in on your question, but we don't. We're not driven by a big desire to achieve a great thing. You know, it's not about a circumnavigation. It's not about crossing an ocean.
No.
What we've set out to do is to be together as a family, and that's what we're achieving. And we can achieve that actually without even really leaving this harbour. Now, we get a bit itchy feet. We get a bit crazy if we don't move on.
Yeah.
But the thing we're trying to achieve is achievable without leaving the Med, really. Or even leaving the island. Mm. But, you know,
yeah,
we're still dreaming.
While we have the opportunity.
While we have the opportunity, yeah. And in search of other families and in search of new experiences and allowing Teo to see new parts of the world and new cultures and so on. That's what's driving us forward. Not a...
I understand. There are the point of the voyage is the voyage.
Right.
There are no particular goals.
That's right.
In sight.
Sure. I've enjoyed being an expatriate at various times and learning about new cultures and meeting new people and getting to know new places. I quite like moving on and discovering somewhere new.
Was there someone, John, in your childhood who inspired you? Maybe it was watching The Undersea World of Jacques Cousteau.
You know what?
Well, that's what inspired me.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I shouldn't scoff then. Not particularly. I don't think I was heavily inspired. My joy of sailing is actually very little to do with the sailing. My enjoyment of sailing has got very little to do with the sailing and a lot more to do with the pace and rhythm of life on a boat. I find that ocean crossages are actually the things that I have enjoyed the most. And there's something about this sort of the routine, the timeless routine to a day where you're not ruled by the clock so much as the day's natural rhythms. And I just find it quite peaceful. I remember when I was crossing the Atlantic, the first time, given a supply of fresh vegetables, I could have stayed out indefinitely. It was just incredibly nice pace to life. Yeah, so that's the thing that I personally get out of boats, but that wasn't really inspired by tales of adventure or anything like that. Mm. Yeah.
So Mia, one final question. You mentioned that you sold your, let's call it a maisonette, in Oslo.
Yes.
So you've burned your bridges.
We have. Well, John is on a sabbatical. Mm. But instead of a sabbatical, I have freedom. yes, so we have burned our bridges.
So this is an open-ended trip.
Well, we'll see how it goes.
John, Mia, and Teo, thank you so much for inviting me aboard today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, thank you for coming out. Thanks for the pastries.
Yeah, thanks.